The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 97 for March 26, 2007. And here we go. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the show. I'm Dave Hamilton. I'm here with John Braun. Hi, John.
Hi, Dave.
How are you?
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
It's springtime. The birds are singing. And
yeah, we got about 4 inches of snow on Saturday night. It was gone by Sunday night. It wasn't quite four, maybe two or three. I don't know.
Well, here, all the wretched ice is gone. And actually, I was out putting around on my bicycle this weekend. It was warm enough. So,
that's good.
It's coming.
That's good. We are back with a show answering all your questions. If we have time, we have a few tips, some that we found, some that you found, and some that we found together. But if we go through everything that I've put on our agenda tonight, we'll be here for about an hour and a half, and only you know how long we've been here because you can look at your iPod or iTunes or MP3 player and see. But we don't know yet, so we're going to move as fast as we can without skipping over here.
Stop yapping. Come on.
Yeah, all right.
Go.
Some business first, though. Some of you may have noticed, some very astute listeners may have noticed that the feed URLs changed this week. It should have been a totally automatic thing. There are the proper 301 redirects and the iTunes new feed URL tags are all filled out. Just moving it from MacObserver.com to MacGeekGab.com just to keep things clean and allow us some more flexibility in the way we do things. Along those lines, we figured we might as well open up the feedback at MacGeekGab.com just to keep that clean, too. And MacGeekGab at MacObserver.com still works just fine, of course. But figured I'd set that up just to have it there. In any event, we will move right into some of our questions as soon as I can get iTunes here. I get so busy talking, and here's Scott.
Hello, this is Scott Jungren in still beautiful Seattle, Washington, and I had one more question, and I forgot to leave my email at the end of the last one. So I'm wondering if there's any way to specify which podcasts and their how they're downloaded. Like, some of them I want to keep all my episodes, and some of them I just want to keep the three most recent and have it automatically delete as they go. But as far as I can think of away from my computer right now, is that it's always universal. It's always download the most recent unplayed and all that. But I'm wondering if there's any way to make each podcast specific.
Yeah, there is. And I believe, John, you might be an expert in this.
Oh, I don't know an expert, but if you consider writing a Monday's Mac Gadget, which is something that I do,
occasionally. I'll look for it every Monday, folks.
Okay. Well, we can try that. But anyways, so on January 9th, 2006, I did a review of this nice little program, an add-on to iTunes called Castaway, and it does exactly what Scott wants. The problem is the iTunes, although it does podcasts, the granularity of when you check for things and when things go away is, well, it's not there.
Right. It's global. Yeah. All
it's global.
Nothing.
So what you choose, so any choice that you make for how long things stick around or how often you check for things applies to all podcasts, which, and actually for my uses, you know, I typically leave it to like five, or so, get rid of, you know, just, you know, push them off after there's five there. That works. But, you know, for a lot of people that doesn't work. You may have, you know, as Scott said, he has, you know, different type of podcast that he listens to. So Castaway, suffice to say, will do this for you. It will let you set up, you know, per podcast, a number of options, including, you know, how long I don't remember all the specifics, but it gets it down to a level of detail per podcast rather than for all podcasts. So how often
right.
you check, I would imagine.
You know, not how often you can check.
All right. But just how long to keep them around.
That's right.
I think that's a key thing. So as, you know, iTunes is pretty much one for all of them, this will let you set it up for different ones.
Yeah, you pretty much set iTunes to leave everything forever, and then you use Castaway to manage each podcast. And it's actually cool because you can tell it, for example, with Mac Geek Gab on my MacBook Pro, I tell it to archive off the shows. And you can do that, again, on a per-podcast basis. So I have a nice little archive of the shows exactly as they're downloaded. Of course, I have them on the computer that we create them on here, too. But I've got the archive in a nice place that's automatically backed up and all of that good stuff. So if there's shows that you want to keep forever, like, you know, Penn Radio, now that it's gone, if you had archived all those, then you could listen to them, and you could even send the ones that I haven't heard to me, you know, for example. But there you go.
So, yeah, so I see, yeah, they have archive, they have a, you know, remove setting, keep unheard, megabyte cap, just a whole heck of a lot of things that you're not going to find in your standard installation. So check it out. And I think they just recently, because when I looked at it, it was 1.7.6, I believe, or 1.7.8, and they just came out with a version 2.0.
So, on St. Patrick's Day, no less.
Wow. And the company, I just like these guys, Wooden Brain Concepts. And they have a little tagline here. Agitprop marketing for our sensuous times. Huh?
You want to leave that up to the listener as we move on?
Well, it could be an exercise, but agitprop is a political propaganda communicated by art and literature.
Nice.
And that's all I'll say. But they also make a lot of other really nice shareware. So we'll link to these guys, of course. And
of course.
All that right. Answers that.
Hi, John and Dave. This is James from Canada. I'm calling because I have an iSub and an Intel iMac. My first iMac was a G5, and it died, and Apple replaced it under warranty, which was quite nice, except for my iSub no longer works when I plug it into the new Intel computer. I got a hold of Apple, and they've said that there's a driver coming. However, that was about a year ago, and nothing's happened, and now we're at 10.4.9 with no solutions. I've been trying to figure out any sort of solution to get my iSub recognized in my sound preference pane, and have come up with no solutions other than perhaps buying some external speakers, which I really don't want to do. I want to keep my desktop nice and clutter-free.
All right.
Right. You know what I'd do first, Dave? But I would, I would imagine the sensible thing to do here would be probably to go to the vendor site, right? I believe this is Harman Kardon, right?
Uh-huh.
Maker of many fine audio products. So one would think that you could go to their website and kind of, you know, get a little detail on this. So would you think that's a reasonable assumption?
Sure, I'll play along. Yes.
No. And actually, so before the show, Dave and I went through this, and this is going to be a little mini rant, is if you're going to offer information on your product, like specifications and help and all that, I don't know where to begin. So I went to the Harman Kardon site to try to find this, and the thing that warned me that this would be an unpleasant experience is when we got to the product support section, if you could even find it, is that they show a nice pull-down menu where you can specify the name of the product. So you click on it, and you get, I forget the proper term, I think it's just a scrolling menu.
Pendulous. The list is pendulous. It just goes on forever.
They must have 500 products in there. So you got to be kind of skillful to stop the scrolling so you don't blow past the iSub entry. But if you go there, they have a link. Most of them say, link's broken, can't find that. Link's broken, can't find that. And then they have a specification link saying click here for iSub specs. And I believe the information they offered was on the level of when the product was introduced and when it was retired.
Don't forget the picture.
Oh, and they had a very nice picture. So, I don't know. It's just a mini rant is, you know, don't let your support site rot and the information be useless or not maintained. I found another site that welovemax.com, and they had more information than the product vendor had on their site. So they list a full list of supported platforms for the iSub. And so if you look here, you can get a hint that, oh my, it's really not supported on my machine. And they talk about this. It's pretty much only well supported on the older Motorola machines. So you can kind of get an idea there. And, you know, he's found that there is no driver, though I think Dave, you and I both did a little digging, and maybe you want to talk about what we did find.
Yeah,
help our friend here.
I'll back clean up here. So the gist is there is no driver available yet. Perhaps one is coming.
Forever.
But yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath. So the idea is, and there's a knowledge base on, of course, on Apple's site that indicates this will not, the iSub will not work unless you have a pair of US or a set of USB speakers plugged in and set as the active speaker in your, system preferences. And then and only then will the iSub work. Now, previously, the iSub would work with the internal speakers. That's not the case here with the Intel Macs. But it got me to thinking, okay, so what you could do is you could buy a really, really cheap set of USB speakers. And I've seen them, and I've seen some that actually have a little volume knob on them, like little travel speakers. You probably get them for like $5 or $10. I got one set as a Christmas gift this year, you know, just one of those gimmies kind of thing. And so you get these, turn them down, and then use Audio Hijack to hijack your system audio and play it through both devices, right? So through your internal speakers as well as whatever's selected in the system preference pane. And that way you'd get the iSub thumping from the external speakers being selected, and then the rest of your sound through the internal speakers, which presumably are better or at least less desk clutter, and you could leave the other speakers just, you know, sort of hanging behind. So the real trick would be finding some sort of USB dongle that would emulate a pair of speakers but not actually contain speakers, and then that would allow the iSub to be used. Of course, you'd have to use Audio Hijack Pro and be a little geeky about it, but we are the Mac Geek Gab, so we are afforded those options, or at the very least, we afford ourselves those options. On the subject of speakers, you know how I like a tie-in. Our first sponsor for this show is Audio Engine USA with the A5 speakers. These are desktop speakers. Most certainly take up their share of room on your desk, and rightly so. They have a huge sound. They've got two speakers in each cabinet. They are separate left and right cabinets, so you can get a nice stereo field going. Excellent frequency response. If you've already got a set of them, you could get another set. You know, let's say you got a set in the office and you want one for the house, or vice versa, or maybe you want one to plug into your Apple TV. The new model has a five-way speaker binding post, which is gold-plated screw-down type thing that replaces the plastic spring clip speaker connectors found on the first round that John and I have. Now nice. They have direct subwoofer outs. It's a full range output to go directly into a subwoofer. If you've got a powered subwoofer, if you need more low end than these deliver, of course, on your desk, I find the low end that these deliver is great. But perhaps if you were in the living room, you might want more. It depends on the size of the room. These things have a decent amount of low end. Now they have both black and white, include all the same features. And the finish on the new black version is a semi-matte or satin finish, which is good for hiding fingerprints and scratches. Again, these are the Audio Engine A5 speakers available at audioengineusa.com. And that brings us to Ron's question about his iPod, where he asked, John and Dave, is there something wrong with my iPod? There are black lines on the time status bar that I only get on several of my downloaded podcast subscriptions, including yours. Is this normal with podcasts? I've never seen this till I started listening to podcasts, and it doesn't happen to all my podcast subscriptions. Any advice would be appreciated. Ron, you are...
You know the answer? Yes, there is something wrong with your iPod, and you must send it to us.
Don't expect it back. No.
There's an answer, and you can give it up. Well, I'll say folks who have been doing audiobooks would have recognized what was happening here, because this is a feature that is common to audiobooks, which is those lines actually indicate a chapter.
That's right. All right. Michael Johnston takes this show and converts it very quickly, I might add, into chapters and into the enhanced AAC format. And that's the format that's by default available in iTunes. If you don't want the chapter marks, or you want the show immediately upon coming out. Now, the AAC feed is usually up within, maybe 7 hours of the show being posted here on Monday night. Sometimes it might take an extra day, but certainly within a day, the enhanced feed is out. It's got links in the If you're playing in iTunes, you've got live links and all that good stuff. But if you want the MP3 feed for whatever reason, that is available. Just go to MacGeekGab.com or MacObserver.com/podcast, and you'll see the links there for the MP3 feed that you can subscribe. It'll work just fine in iTunes and all that. So that is...
And I believe on the iPod, if you just hit the, I guess it would be the forward arrow.
Yeah. Jump from chapter to chapter.
That will let you, yeah. Instead of jumping song to song, which is what you expect if you're playing music, this jumps to the next chapter. And I think the iPod, depending on the one you have, will also show you the art that you were talking about that you normally see in iTunes.
That's right. Yeah. Obviously, the links aren't live on the iPod, but that probably yet. Goes without saying yet.
Yeah. What a good idea. We know nothing. Well, just
we really do know nothing.
Speculating. Yeah.
At least nothing about that. So we move on to Ken's question. It is a pesky one.
Hey, John and Dave. This is Ken from New Jersey. Hope you can help me out.
We too.
Been having a problem with iChat. When I start this system up and open up iChat, every time I try to initiate or receive either a voice or video call, the system crashes. I disconnect from AOL. And I have to reboot, which takes a little while. Not reboot the whole system, but reboot the application. After I reboot the application, I can send and receive and make calls all day long. But it seems to happen every time the system is initiated from a cold start.
Yeah, I've seen this too. And I've only seen it on my Intel MacBook Pro. So I'm curious, Ken, if you're using an Intel-based Mac there. And I've found the same thing that, you know, you go to answer a call or start a call and iChat just goes into spinning beach ball of death. The only way to recover is to force quit and relaunch and then it's fine. Although it doesn't happen all the time for me. So I wonder if there's a cache cleaning issue or something out there. If anyone has any thoughts, John, if you've got any thoughts, I know we talked about it before the show. So if you've had any thoughts in the last 20 minutes here.
I have many thoughts.
Do you? Any on this particular matter?
The only thing I'd offer is to try to find out who's causing the problem or what's causing the problem is to go to our pal console in utilities.
I love the console.
Because there's so much good information hidden in there.
Yeah.
So it's either the crash box that you get, I call it the crash box, that comes up when something fails. And one of the buttons.
There's no crash box, by the way. It just spins, and you have to force quit it. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't get a. Okay. You don't get a. This application is quit unexpectedly. Blah blah blah. Ooh.
Nope.
Oh, those crashes really bother me.
Yes.
But the other thing is, if something's misbehaving before it totally goes down in flames, sometimes it may spit something out into the log.
Yep.
Which would be, so, you know, you run the console utility, and I think it's, tilde library logs. You'll probably see an entry in there somewhere, iChat.
Yeah, or even just looking at the console log may give, or the system, you know, the messages log may give a good indication. Mm-hmm. This makes me kind of veer off the agenda here, John, and there's a product that I've tinkered with before. I don't know why I haven't re-enabled it on my MacBook Pro. I loved it for a while. A product called Geek Tool. Have you used it?
No.
The idea is it's a system preference pane, and what it does is it allows you to display various things on your desktop, and one of the things can be the output of a log file, the live output of a log file, just magically appearing on the background of your desktop, or you can have it be a window that, you know, floats over all, but I used to have a bunch of logs on my desktop, and then you can also have it display images live that it goes and gets from the web, you know, however often you want it to. And I was using some server traffic grabs, some MRTG graphs, just so at a glance I could see what was going on. So Geek Tool, and we'll put a link. It's a there's a project page at tinso.org for Geek Tool. So if you're someone like me that enjoys looking at the console log, this is one way to do it. So there you go. I think we have another question. I just need to get there. See, I got off.
Mike.
I got off track. Yeah, we'll talk to Mike.
Hey, guys. It's Mike calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Just had a quick question. I just got the Slingbox and Pro, and I use that with my MacBook Pro, and it works great. Easy setup, really good product. Anyway, the question is, you have to set up Universal Plug and Play, UPnP, for the Slingbox to work. And I was trying to do some research to figure out if that option was available on the airport base station, the new base station. I had read some form that says it wasn't available. If you could clarify this, that'd be great. My contact information.
All right.
UPnP. Well, I guess the if we're talking the airport device,
yes,
then
airport
I think unfortunately the answer to Mike is he is talking about UPnP, he is SOL, which stands for sorry, out of luck.
Thank goodness we can retain the clean rating on this show, John. Move along, please.
Okay, so UPnP, what is UPnP? So one thing, it's kind of badly named because some people may, it's Universal Plug and Play, but it's not the plug and play that Windows advertised, which some people called it Plug and Pray because it didn't always work. But it basically, we'll forget about the Windows part here. We got to move right along. So UPnP, you know, I was trying to figure out what it was, Dave. So I thought, again, being a, you know, a sensible type of guy, why don't I go to the UPnP page, upnp.org, I think it is.
Okay.
To find out what the heck is UPnP. And, you know, I think you and I were both looking at it, and I, for the life of me, couldn't figure out what the heck it was.
Well, I found it. I finally, when we were digging, I found a page here. Let me read to you from this just to illustrate.
Okay.
This goes back to your rant about Harman and providing valuable information, the kind of the five-second rule. Show me what you're about within 5 seconds of me glancing at your page, and I'll read you this. The UPnP architecture offers pervasive peer-to-peer network connectivity of PCs of all form factors, intelligent appliances, and wireless devices. The UPnP architecture is a distributed open networking architecture that leverages TCP/IP and the web to enable seamless proximity networking in addition to control and data transfer among network devices in the home, office, and everywhere in between. I'd like to thank these people for keeping us in business, because there is no way that this makes sense to people that need to know. You want to tell them in 15 words or
English?
Less what UPnP English. There you go. Go.
UPnP, for people that know what port forwarding is, which is we spoke about in the past, but it's something that you do to your router to redirect traffic, usually from the outside to a machine on the inside that normally wouldn't have this port mapping done. UPnP is a way for application programs to ask a router to do this. It's a standard protocol, and the application says, hey, can you map your outside port on this IP address to the port on the inside to this IP address? And I think I pretty much got it there, that's what UPnP is. It's a port. It's a way to automate so you don't have to sit there typing in all these arcane IP addresses and port numbers. Someone thought, hey, it'd be great to come up with a protocol where an application could ask the router to do this. As far as I know, that's what it is. So because if you take what you said before, Dave, from the webpage and you filter out all the marketing speak, it basically equals zero. It means nothing.
It means nothing. That's right. Yeah. So the idea is you've got some device that needs to receive traffic, and you want it to tell your router, which manages the traffic, to send that traffic to the device, and that's what UPnP does. But what good is one standard when you can have two? And because two is twice as nice. And the airport base station supports a second very similar standard called NAT-PMP, which I believe is Network Address Translation Port Mapping Protocol. And it does the same thing, but of course devices or applications need to be written to support both. The folks at Rogue Amoeba have done a great job explaining the nuts and bolts of this. If you want to read that, we've put a link to their explanation in the show notes. But not every app supports both. If one supports NAT-PMP, chances are it also supports UPnP. But the airport base station does not. It only supports NAT-PMP. So people with Mike, with your Slingbox, you're out of luck. Unless you can, and I'm sure you can, go on the web, figure out what ports need to be forwarded to the Slingbox, figure out what IP it's getting, and then just manually forward those ports back to the Slingbox.
That's, you know, if you can get from them assuming they assume standard ports,
yeah,
or the same port every time is required for the traffic, then yeah,
right.
He may be able to manually to a port forward. Now, this is a reason, although the airport, you know, I got to say, I mean, I owned airports for a few years, but I found that versus the competition, I mean, they were pretty and shiny and they worked well with the Apple configuration utility. Sometimes they were lacking in features, as in this case. I don't know why they didn't decide to include UPnPs, but, and my understanding from reading on the web is even the latest airport Extreme, which has a lot of really nice features like, you know, hard drive sharing and all that great stuff in 802.n, doesn't support this protocol, which from what I've seen in a lot of the software I use is pretty much the standard. Yeah. So I used a Linksys WRT54G with DDWRT, which is an open source firmware, so you have to reload the software on the router. And the nice thing is, although from what you told me, Dave, Linksys does support UPnP, the DDWRT firmware, which we link to, shows you, and this makes it crystal clear what it's doing, shows you a list of each of the ports and IP addresses that have been requested for UPnP access, which I think is a fantastic feature, because then you can see, because the only thing I'd say about UPnP is that if you have a rogue application or somebody wants to wreak havoc or hack into you, they could conceivably write an application which opens up all sorts of ports that should not be.
It's infectious.
So, So that's a feature that I think is great about DDW. And I look at these, like I see a few, they're called IC, which I believe is iChat. And if you run some BitTorrent clients, they will show you in the description, you know, this one, actually, I'm kind of disappointed they didn't say iChat. I mean, they have IC. But some other applications will state their name as far as the description of why the port is being opened, so you can really keep a close track. So it's
so for example, go ahead.
No, I was just saying for flexibility, it's great to have this feature, but it imposes a potential security risk. So I would say, you know, unless you have a reason not to upgrade your firmware to something like DDWRT so you can see this list, because it could be, I mean, there could be all these ports open all over the place and you would not even know it. And that's one concern I would have about this protocol.
Right. So, I run the DDWRT. And if Mike were to bring his sling box over here, we could plug it in, get it set up, and then look in the list of UPnP assignments and say, okay, here's the ports that the sling box has requested, and bam, you just take it home and do those. And of course, Mike's actually only one town over. I don't know if I want to invite everybody, but you know, there you go. Sling box folks can send me one, and I'll just email Mike the list. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm sure has written something that looks like a UPnP client, which he could point his device to, and it would accept the request and list them out. Because, I mean, if it's in the router,
like a dummy
thing,
so
a little program you run, and you point your device at that, and it collects the request and shows you what ports it wants to open. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I didn't search for that before the show, but but we should. There may be something out there, or if one of our beloved listeners,
if you know the ports, just send us the thing. We'll email it to Mike, and there you go. So our next sponsor is Smile on My Mac, and you heard us talk about them a couple of shows ago. The product that we're talking about here is called PDF Pen, and the idea is PDFs are great things. They allow us to pass data back and forth, but the one thing you can't do is you really can't manage them without something big like Acrobat, and even then you're somewhat limited. What PDF Pen allows you to do is a lot of things, actually. You can take a bunch of PDFs and combine them or split them or both. So let's say you wanted 3 pages from one PDF and 4 pages from another. You could put them all together as one solid PDF and send it off. You can add images and text to PDFs. So let's say you've got a PDF that's a form, but it's not set as a form that you can fill out. You can use PDF Pen to fill out the form. I've done it. It works great. If you have a scan of your signature, you can actually paste that in. So if you've got to, you know, sign something and fax it back, you don't even have to. You just save it as a PDF and back it goes. You can obviously reorder or delete pages and assemble things back and forth. If you've got PDFs of all sorts of different projects and contracts and you just want to lump them all together, this is certainly one way to do it. I know one company actually had a bunch of their magazines that they had sent out, and they wanted to compile them into one big, long electronic document. And so they went into all the programs that they used to create the magazines, printed to PDF, and then assembled it as one with PDF Pen. Fantastic stuff, available at smileonmymac.com. PDF Pen. And that moves us along to Eugene. And Eugene writes, I wanted to ask you about a problem I have using mail. Every time I use the bounce option to opt out from annoying mailing lists, mail will freeze for about 2 to 4 minutes and give me the spinning wheel. Then it will either do the job or crash and restart. Are you aware of any bugs? I can't find anything relevant on the web. I have a MacBook Core 2 Duo 2 gigahertz. Let me ask another question, but we'll talk about this one first. I've seen this too. There's a couple of things that cause it. One is if you have imported certificates for your email addresses, you can, for those of you that don't know, with Apple Mail, you can bring certificates in that allow you to digitally sign, and then if you have someone else's signature, encrypt messages that you're sending back and forth. And Mail provides all the provisions for doing this. You just click a button and bam, it's done. But I've seen it where that can slow down mail, and I've heard reports from others that it can do it too. It's possible that that's what's causing this. Again, looking at the console log, like I said, I've seen this. It doesn't cause any great processor strain or anything. It's just sort of sitting there and then becomes responsive. Along those lines, though, I've found the bounce option doesn't really work. You're better off just not doing anything, in my experience, but maybe you've found different. So you want to mention something there, John?
Well, I just want to add one thing. So you were talking about certificates. We're not going to go into a lot of detail about public key crypto and all that, but just a little side note here is if you go to your utilities folder, again, there's something called keychain access, and there is a certificates category. You may just want to make sure your certificates are in good shape.
Yep.
And actually, I'm looking over a few of mine here, and I think you and I had done a encrypted.mac deal, and I just see that our certs are expired. So renew those.
Yep.
Whoops. Yep. So anyways, and then yeah, we had a part B or
there
part
was part
two. This,
two. Yep. I decided to switch to Apple after 15 years of being a Windows user, and I must say I'm very pleased. Yeah, and hope to never have to go back. I have a small complaint though. I've had my MacBook for only 3 weeks, and already I had to download and install 4 updates: 2 macOS 10 updates, 160 megs each, and 2 iTunes updates, 70 and 27 megs. So in just 3 weeks, I had more than 400 megabytes of updates. Is this something regular? If it keeps like this, I'll have to buy a new hard disk soon. Please let me know. You want to take that, John?
I would say that he probably ran into a stretch of things, like especially iTunes. They had a little oopsie. And you and I, Dave, I mean, I don't know. I'm still stupid this way. I see an update, I download it and try it. But unfortunately, sometimes you probably should wait a little bit. And I think so, at least in the terms of the iTunes update, I know there were especially some problems on the Windows side,
right,
with Vista, from what I heard. So I would say there was an unusual string of recent updates. Because normally, I mean, they keep it pretty infrequent. I was actually surprised to see a 10.4.9, the only good news being that hints that they have no more room left.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They can't go any farther. We got to get 10.5.
They could do
10.4.10,
you know.
But, you could do that.
Yeah, you could.
But then that would get away from single digit. But I guess the thing I wanted to mention was I was searching around because I wanted to figure, did the latest stuff. So first off, no, the updates are not, you are not adding, you're not taking up all that disk space. Something gets deleted, and a lot of times the packages will replace portions of the OS and replace them with newer versions that are more stable, hopefully, and faster and all that. But I guess you may wonder, where do I find all this information? Like, first off, I was just curious, what did 10.4.9 do? Because we have another comment we may not get to that was talking about memory management. And I was like, gee, did 10.4.9 address that? And where you can go is if you go to Library, Receipts, then the name of the update, because what happens is when you install something, a little record of what happened is stored in a receipts folder in the top level library folder. So in this case, for example, I was looking in Mac OS X UPD 10. .pkg. That's a package. So in the receipts directory, you will see a list of packages. The interesting thing is that you can see the contents of what was installed by, if you right-click or control-click on that package, you can then say open package. And I was thrilled the first time I tried this. So it actually hints at some of the elegance in OS X, is that they kind of hide this from you because you probably don't need to know this, but if you want to, you can find it with a control click. And then if you dig around, so in this case, I want to know specifically what the 10.4.9 update did as an example.
Okay.
And for most Apple installers, if you go to contents, resources, english.lproj, there's a file called sudescription.html. We're pegging the geek meter here. And that is the text that you see normally go through software update. And it lists all that text. That's where it's stored, is in this HTML file. So you can even open it in Safari. So if you poke around, from what I've seen in most apps, it's called sudescription.html. So that can... We may have gone off on a tangent here, but
dude, this is great.
Is that you can find out what all these updates do. I mean, some people may put the description of what it does, or they may not do it at all, but at least for the Apple updates, this is where you can find out, gee, what did that update do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So the contents of the receipts folder is very interesting. Don't mess with it, because as far as I know, that's kind of how, especially if you want to do an uninstall or incremental install, I think some important stuff is stored in there, because otherwise why would it put it in there?
Right.
Maybe it just puts it in there to just keep a record of what happened. But
it uses it
to determine, has something been applied already? I would imagine this is where it looks.
Mm-hmm.
Do I need this? Because I know sometimes it's doing some mojo with the software update, and I'm sure a big part of that is looking in here to say, is this installed already? And I think that's what they do. They go to Apple, the Apple website, and they probably get a list of the updates, and then it's compared against what, or either a file that contains that. I'm kind of speculating here, but I think we're probably somewhat on the mark.
Yeah.
So anyways, fascinating things in the receipts directory inside your library folder.
I wanted to mention PDF Pen version 3 is available for $49.95 US from smileonmymac.com. I neglected to mention the price before, and I know how important that is, and I know I'll get emails from people saying, how much? So there you go. Do we want to move on to Rob? Where are we time-wise here? You know what? Let's talk about Philip emailed us about sort of an unrelated problem, and we had an email exchange back and forth. One of the interesting things that Philip mentioned was a product called iFreeMem, and we'll put a link in the show notes because the URL is too much to spell. What iFreeMem does is, and it's available shareware, and I think there's, I forget how much it is, but it's available for download. What it does is, you know how you have, when you start up your Mac, if you're a menu meters guy, like, or gal, like we are, and you take a look, you'll see that you've got a lot of memory free and not so much inactive, and then some active and wired. When you've got a lot of free memory and you launch an app, apps tend to launch pretty quickly. If you've got very little free memory but a lot inactive, apps tend to take a little while longer to launch. And what iFreeMem does is, with a little bit of mojo behind the scenes, safely, at least as far as I can tell, clears out all your inactive memory, or as much of it as it can, and frees it up. Now, this will cause some apps to have a little lag the next time you go into them as it sort of replenishes that. But it, for my money, it cleans out a lot of the cruft that's out there. I know we're going to hear from some purists saying don't mess with memory management, but you know, maybe this goes back to the OS 9 days for me. I find that when my system gets to a point where there's a lot of inactive memory and very little free memory, launching apps and moving around can sometimes get really slow. And running iFreeMem and letting it clean out, or you know, convert all that, if you will, makes a big difference. So it's worth checking out. We'll put a link in the show notes and go from there. So, but I think
it's a good balance, though. I think people probably shouldn't do what you did a couple of weeks ago, which is to totally clobber the pager process.
That's right. Yes, that I don't recommend that.
That's extreme, and yeah, well, you found out why.
I got some emails from people saying, thank you for being much braver than I am. And I think braver could be replaced with a variety of words that sound a whole lot less valiant. But we'll leave it as that because it makes me feel good.
But this sounds like a good balance that it's kind of nudging the system in the right direction to, you know, clear things out without being too traumatic.
Yeah, you know, it's the kind of thing that would make sense to run if you've just quit a bunch of apps or if you're about to run. I know I do it when I'm about to run Parallels because I know Parallels is going to glom onto a whole bunch of RAM. And so freeing up as much as I can and making it actually free sort of pushes, like you said, it pushes the system in the right direction. It allows it to grab the right stuff. So,
because I've noticed the app in my book that I have the biggest, or I noticed the most benefit by quitting or restarting is the same Safari. Is that my system, like a lot of folks, I think, is that I don't restart my portable. I just put it to sleep.
Right.
You know, I'll surf in the morning. I'll put it to sleep. I get home. I'll surf some more. And eventually, after several days, because I surf to a lot of different websites, I'll notice that the RAM reported by menu meters is huge. And I'm like, how did it? Like, even now, it's 900 megabytes. And I'm like, what is using all that?
Right.
So, I don't know. So I'd imagine this. I'm going to try it to free up the memory. But yeah, I quit and come back, and it's just. You know, the more you surf, I think the quicker that's going to happen.
The more you surf, the quicker it'll happen. That may be true. I found that. You open a lot of tabs, and Safari just bloats up. So I always quit Safari or try to quit Safari on my portable before I leave it for the day. So
yeah, and I'm just surfing the news sites, you know?
Of course you are.
I have a lot of graphics.
Business graphics, we call them. So feedback at MacGeekGab.com is the email address to use. Of course, all the other
new
methods.
Improved.
The new and improved. That's right. It's sort of, and we've also changed the way the GUID is on all future feeds. This or not or future episodes in the feed to kind of keep things clean. We've been trying to just clean everything up on the back end. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. 206-666-GEEK, which is John.
4335.
Nice. So 206-666-4335. You can Skype to Mac Geek Gab, and that's automatically routed to our voicemail number, so there's no problem. That's right. It just gets right to us. We don't even know, actually. It's great. We like it when things all come to the same place. It makes prepping for the show simple. Cashfly Hosting is where you've downloaded this show from. The podcast marketplace includes the 6i Isolator earphones from Edemotic, the A5 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, Yojimbo from Barebones Software, Audible at audible.com, and PDF Pen from Smile on My Mac. The Backbeat Media Podcast Network is hard at work placing your ads on this show and others. In fact, we have a big announcement this week that I don't think has been announced yet, but I'll say it anyway. MacCast has joined the Backbeat Media Podcast Network, and we are very proud to have Adam Christensen as part of the network. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I know. I'm stoked about this.
We saw him at Macworld. That was cool.
We saw Adam at Macworld. Yeah. That's right. And at the Podcast Expo and various other places.
All over the place.
Welcome addition not only to the community, but to our little home here at Backbeat Media.
Now, did you do the kind of initiation?
No, we haven't done that yet. We won't tell them about that. Yeah, we'll talk about that after we sign off here. We have Gmail invites, but you don't need them anymore.
They kind of opened that up.
They opened that up. That's right.
You know, it's not on the list here. Nation states? There's a few new issues. I looked today.
Did you really? It's been a while. I haven't been on in about 2 weeks, so I try to stay logged in occasionally. So nation states at nationstates.com. Join the Geeks Unite region.
Are you sure it's .com? I thought it was
No,
net.
You're right. Thank you. It's nationstates.net. .net. That's right. And I have 13 telegrams and 5 issues, so I haven't been here in a little while. And 1.247 billion people. All right, that's it. Let's get out of here. 206-666-GEEK, MacGeekGab.com for the show notes. John will have them up within minutes of the show being live. Or minutes. Minutes is kind of like Martian time, if you grok what I'm saying.
Well, you can measure anything in minutes, which I like. You didn't say how many minutes.
No, I didn't.
It was...
you know, everywhere is walking distance if you have the time. It's that same sort of concept. Just don't get caught.
Maynard.